don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. All right, crew, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. If you have been listening to the show, you have definitely heard Nick Bhatia's work, or you've heard him specifically on the show. He was Crypto Chat number 3. So if you want to go back to listen and listen to that one, this is going to be another one of his articles in his 4-part series. I started reading it before it actually was a 4-part series. We actually started with the Bitcoin Risk Spectrum, which was number 3 in the series of articles. And then we had gone back, that was episode 109, I believe. And then we went back and read the Bitcoin Second Layer, I think is what it's called. I believe that was Nick Bhatia's. Yes, Bitcoin Second Layer. That was on episode 132. So we have read part 3 and part 1, and now I am going to jump into today. It's a short one, but it's really good, and it was actually the first one that he wrote, but it would be part 2 in his series on the Lightning Network reference rate. And this one is titled, The Time Value of Bitcoin. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump in. Too long, didn't read. The HTLCs in Lightning Network give Bitcoin a path to become a global reserve currency. Abstract. Lightning Network provides a framework to measure the time value of Bitcoin, a precursor for a capital market and reserve currency status. Observable variables in hash time lock contracts can be used to calculate the interest rate received on Bitcoin held in payment channels, allowing investors to measure their opportunity cost of capital. Lightning Network wallet software should include ways to calculate interest and prove the rate received in a trust-minimized way. A reference rate should be developed akin to US dollar LIBOR, using consensus to dictate how the rate is calculated. This reference rate can anchor off-chain Bitcoin lending into the global economy, leading to Bitcoin-denominated banks, credit ratings, debt capital markets, and eventually an entire financial system, a path towards status as a global reserve currency. Calculation method. 3 observable variables are needed to calculate an interest rate: principal, cash flows, and time. In Lightning Network, the principal is the amount of Bitcoin in a payment channel. Cash flows are routing fees. Time is the block time in which the fee collection is measured. Wallet implementations should experiment with different interest rate calculation methods with the eventual goal of a consensus method. The US dollar has treasuries, Fed funds, LIBOR, OIS, and SOFR all acting as reference rates within the capital market for lending, borrowing, and swapping cash flows. Bitcoin needs to establish a reference rate of its own, referred to in this writing as LNRR, or the Lightning Network Reference Rate. There are many possible ways to calculate LNRR. Principal may be measured once per block, or using an average over time. Fees may be measured for individual HTLCs, individual payment channels, or Lightning Network nodes with multiple channels. Block time may be measured by the lock time of HTLCs or measured one block at a time. Compounding conventions may be discrete or continuous. On-chain fees paid to open and close channels may be included or excluded in the calculation. We need to experiment with calculation methods because Bitcoin is an entirely new asset class and shouldn't adhere to financial conventions of the past, even though traditional fixed income markets set the bar extremely high for financial sophistication. Time value of Bitcoin. Fees, time value, and security risk premiums are discussed in the Bitcoin Lightning Network Scalable Off-Chain Instant Payments by Joseph Poon and Thaddeus Dreija. The time value of fees pays for consuming time, for example, 3 days, and is conceptually equivalent to a gold lease rate without custodial risk. It is the time value for using up the access to money for a very short duration. Historically, one of the largest components of fees and interest in the financial system are from various forms of counterparty risk. In Bitcoin, it is possible that the largest component in fees will be derived from security risk premiums. Fees in Lightning Network can be attributed to two components, time value and security risk premium. Fees compensate the leasing of Bitcoin, which translates into time value. Positive interest rates should attract capital and competition. But Lightning Network node operators investing capital are not doing so purely risk-free. They're taking on a variety of risks, most notably the risk of using hot wallets to stake liquidity to the network. Therefore, interest rates will vary between nodes due to different security practices, captured here by the catch-all variable security risk premium. R equals time value plus security risk premium. Lightning Banks. Lightning Network will birth Lightning Banks. Their first function will be to provide liquidity to Lightning Network by funding payment channels. They will try to position themselves as central routing hubs, capturing as many fees as possible. Competition will be open and fierce. Those with the greatest ability to efficiently manage payment channels and actively optimize routing positioning will profit. Reference rate. LIBOR was originally intended as an interdealer interest rate. However, market conditions and manipulation scandals have significantly changed its role. Despite its evolution, LIBOR's model could serve as an example for LNRR to follow. The calculation method for LIBOR is essentially a panel. Banks are asked to submit rates, and these rates are aggregated to form a reference rate published once a day. Lightning Banks can publish their interest rates to each other in order to foster a dealer community similar to the LIBOR panel banks. Any node that can publish an interest rate can potentially contribute to LNRR, and ideally all interest rates that are published would be cryptographically provable by all participants to assure complete transparency. Once Lightning Banks establish LNRR, they can reference this rate and charge a spread for loans that are not secured by the Bitcoin blockchain. They can use the reference rate to attract deposits, which would also not be secured by the blockchain. While off-chain trusted Bitcoin-denominated capital market activity does not benefit from Bitcoin's immutability, it is essential for the establishment of Bitcoin as a currency capable of global economic activity. Economic activity requires a trade-off between time preferences, which can only be achieved when savers are allowed to lend capital. Conclusion. LNRR is not some magic solution. This paper is a suggestion to the Lightning developer community to start experimenting with the translation of HTLCs to a financial framework. We cannot go from Trace Mayer's sixth network effect of financialization to the seventh network effect of reserve currency status without the correct financial tools. Bitcoin has already emerged as a new asset class and is now acting as a reserve asset for millions around the world. Transitioning from reserve asset to reserve currency will present a challenging path. Ideas like the Lightning Network reference rate should be discussed and explored so that we can continue to push Bitcoin forward as the world's best abstraction of money. Follow me at twitter.com/timevalueofBTC. All right, and there we have it. That was part two. Again, you can listen to part one, I believe it is, in episode 132, and then you can listen to part three on episode 109. And of course, you can hear our chat where we sat down with Nick Bhatia and talked all about all this stuff, the CFA, the Lightning Network reference rate, some of the new Lightning tech that's coming out, the degrees of counterparty risk, all that great stuff. We had a really fun time on Crypto Chat number three with Nick Bhatia. So definitely check that out. And I thought this was just another good one to hit. I wanted to hit this whole series eventually. Sorry it's a little bit spaced out and random, but I still think it's very pertinent. And I did have a couple of comments to make. He was talking about, like, how exactly to reference the time value exactly. He said the principal may be measured once per block or using an average over time. I would say, even though block seems the more elegant and like specifically Bitcoin solution, I would say just going by time makes more sense, because it's explicitly like the off-chain nature of the payments, the fact that it's on a second layer, it specifically does not need blocks to, like, whether or not the next block comes in 6 hours or 2 minutes does not have an effect on the amount of routing fees that they're going to take in. It is explicitly whether they could have 1,000 routes, they could route 1,000 payments in that 6 hours, or they could route 1,000 payments in that 2 minutes. They're kind of arbitrary with each other. So I would say it would make more sense for it to be measured strictly in time, and maybe using the number of blocks as like maybe a trusted backup or whatever, since you can explicitly hash. There's always the problem of time warp, which we learned about with Verge and Daniel Goldman. But because of that, measuring it strictly in time is not exactly... it's still a bit of a trusted setup. Not that there's a whole lot of risk there, but regardless, you know, you want to minimize trust as much as possible. So you could maybe use the blocks with the opening and closing of the payment channel as kind of a second, like, weighted measurement of sorts, and then simply use the timestamp of those blocks as the official, quote-unquote, time that the route was available. But that kind of brings us to the next point that was mentioned right after. It said, fees may be measured for individual HTLCs, individual payment channels, or Lightning Network nodes with multiple channels. So with individual HTLCs, I don't think that can really work, because the HTLCs last fractions of a second. They're kind of measured on milliseconds. And for the vast majority of the time that you have a channel open, it's just kind of sitting there arbitrarily. So if you were trying to measure the time strictly by measuring HTLCs that are constantly just being made and closed off-chain, you wouldn't really get a realistic number as to what the cost of what the time cost is for how many payments you're routing. So I think it makes sense with the individual payment channels, but the other option is Lightning Network nodes with multiple channels. The reason I think it makes sense with individual channels themselves is because that's the only time where the node is paying the fee. And you would be measuring the degree of risk or likelihood that a channel would have to be closed or rerouted or spliced or balanced in some way, and or maliciously closed. So you would be taking into account that if a payment channel gets stuck open for the dispute window because the other party does not actively close the channel with you, does not sign the closing transaction, and you have to close it one-sided, then that would have to be taken into account, the fact that you now lost 5 days in having to wait for a payment channel to close and were not able to continue routing fees. But you've still got a bit of a problem with using that as a strict sole measurement, because a single payment channel doesn't route anything. You have to have multiple channels to route as a node. So maybe it would be kind of a spectrum of, this is how much you'll typically, this is your LNRR with one payment channel, which is zero. This is your LNRR with two payment channels. This is it with three, and have like an average based on the number of active open channels that you have and the added degree of risk and cost of having to wait the 5 days or whatever the dispute period is if you go offline with a node that is unreliable. Or not you go offline, but you have a node that you're connected to go offline and no longer sign the transactions through, which makes it an unroutable payment channel. And whether you make the choice of leaving it open and hoping they come back, or trying to close it and waiting for the dispute period. So I just think that's a couple of things to kind of take into account. It's still like when he talks about Lightning Banks, like it makes so much sense to use that as an analogy, but it does make me cringe a little bit just because I know what images it paints in some people's minds. But this is not Lightning. These won't be banks, I don't think, any more than Uber is a taxi company. Like these are going to be servers run by people with capital, period. Like I want to have, when this is like full on release, I intend to have, if there's any money in this at all, even a tiny, tiny percentage in the LNRR, I want to have a node. There will be nothing about my setup that is bankish. So like while I understand that it's a perfect thing to use as an analogy because of the role being played, I also understand why it is that people are turned off by the language of saying LIBOR, which has this huge collusion scandal with a bunch of the banks, which is ridiculous to think that that would happen in the Lightning Network because there's no barriers to entry whatsoever. I mean, this is a completely global thing. There's not like a multi-million dollar bonds that you have to get from the government and this long string of regulations that you have to go through for 6 years to become a financial institution and have permission from all the incumbents, so on and so forth. Like the club that is the financial sector and like strict banking, like interest rate, you could not have a more centrally controlled market than interest rate. And its manipulation is ridiculous. So LIBOR has massive problems because it's a derivative of that ridiculous system. Lightning Network will never have that issue unless, of course, Bitcoin has that issue. And then that means this whole experiment is just the gig is up and there was nothing here. And our security profile is just crap and it's open to manipulation. So I don't think that's a concern at all, but his analogies of banks and LIBOR is actually very, very good for understanding what role is played in the financial markets and the developing of these reference rates and the time value or the cost over time, or I guess the return over time of a certain security profile and financial contract, which would be the Lightning Network in this instance. Okay, I don't think we need to go any further. I just wanted to kind of point those things out, and we will be hitting, I think he's got number four out. Let me check real quick, make sure I'm right. Bitcoin ETFs, custodians, and collateral. Does he not have part four out? The Bitcoin second layer, part one of four? I don't know. I'm not sure. I'll keep looking. I mean, he's got a lot of other things. He's got some observations from Alex Bosworth, Next Step for Nodes. But he may only have three of the four-part series on Lightning Network reference rate. I actually think he said somewhere that the last one will be called the Lightning Network reference rate. I could be wrong, but we'll see. We'll see if he responds to this, and maybe I'll send him a message just to check. And we will read that regardless whenever it finally comes out, and we will have the entire four-part series by Nick Bhatia covered on the Crypto Economy Podcast. If you are not following him, though, you definitely should. He's got a lot of great discussion about this concept and has a ton of great insights into the current financial markets and capital markets and how what pieces need to be contractually replaced to make this thing usable for more sophisticated financial instruments. So I definitely encourage you to follow him and check him out on Medium. He's got a lot of other little things that I may never be able to get to in the podcast. So check those out. Drop some applause on this article on Medium. I will link to both the Medium article and, of course, tag him in the Twitter post. But aside from that, don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Medium and Twitter. And, of course, Mastodon. That's at The Crypto Economy at bitcoinhackers.org. That's the specific instance that I am on. And, of course, you can find that in the link as a link in my Twitter description, so you can just get it right there. And do not forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss any of the cool stuff. And like I said, I've got some really cool announcements coming up, and we had to push back the conversation with Brady from Citizen Bitcoin, so that'll be out early next week sometime on Bitcoin Education. So be sure to subscribe. Stay tuned. We got some really fun discussions coming up on that. I still am sitting on a couple of episodes that I'm trying to figure out how to parse and where I'm taking the concept. So stay tuned for that stuff as well. And I have a completely external to podcast format itself announcement coming soon too. Maybe all of that will drop next week. I'm not sure. I might want to spread it out a little bit so I don't go crazy in the middle of the week. But thank you for listening. Please subscribe to keep up with all the cool stuff we got going on. And of course, if you would like to help the show out, if you would like to keep this running, this is all being done for free. I almost forgot. I should have started off the episode with this. I got another donation yesterday from somebody. Sent me like $2. Awesome. Thank you so much. I super, super appreciate like feeling like I've provided somebody with value, and I know it is not trivial. I mean, maybe this sounds like patronizing, but I'm not trying to be. It is not trivial to think it's like, oh, I should donate to somebody, because I think about that all the time, but then I notice it only happens like 4% of the time, and that's because it's kind of annoying, and it's another 6 steps to get to the point where I'm like, okay, breaking out my Trezor, finding the address, going to the page, scanning it, deciding when I'll send them $10, I'm going to send them a 50 cent. Oh, damn it. What's the fees right now? So on and so forth. Like it is a kind of serious commitment to like, okay, I am going to donate. And I super, super appreciate it when somebody makes that commitment. And something, $2 is more than enough. Thank you so much. It really goes a long way, and I will make it stretch as far as I can. Thank you guys so much for supporting the show. I will always have my Bitcoin donation address available to you. And if you were looking to get your Trezor hardware wallet, I highly recommend always having a hardware wallet if you were storing any significant or consequential amount of crypto at all. Get a hardware wallet. You will not regret it. It is the safest place to store your Bitcoin and crypto. And if you get it through my affiliate link, you will send a couple of dollars my way, and it won't cost you a dime. So thank you so much, guys, and I will catch you all next week. Have a wonderful weekend and Labor Day. I should have an episode out on Monday, by the way, so it won't be Labor Day for me because, well, this is not labor. This is my love. So, I'll talk to you all on Monday. Thanks for listening to the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.